This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
His shooting percentage is down. He doesn't look good on the court. We all know the crap that happened over the summer. He's disgruntled. They traded his brother. They were trying to replace him with LaMarcus Aldridge. We get it.
Kevin Rayfuse.
Good, but I don't want to be stuck in the limbo of mediocrity. I don't want to gamble that maybe one day there's a Harden trade out there. I don't want to gamble that some team is going to be stupid and let a Steve Nash walk out the door and go to Phoenix the way Dallas did, where you stumble upon a superstar.
And Justin Kuzak.
They've got Batum, Lamb, Jeremy Lin, Spencer Hawes. They're up to about 35% as a team, which is actually 13th in the NBA. And Nicholas Batum is playing like an all-star right now.
Well, if you like that, you're going to love this.
Well, if anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's do this!
Let's go.
So usually when we start this show off, you know, we try to give you guys a break from basketball for a little bit before we, you know, get into our hour-long show about nothing but basketball. But that's not going to happen today because there was a basketball game that just took place. And let's just say Tim is hanging his head in shame right now. He's been dreading this. And the worst part is, I'll say this, Justin and I didn't even rub in the fact that the Sixers beat the Suns. Tim brought it up.
To be fair, I watched like the very beginning of the game, and then I was just like, I'm done. I'm not going to watch this. And then like I was laying in bed, and I think I got a text from you, Tim, and I was just like, what? And I turned it back on, and I saw. So I was like, oh, that's so exciting.
Well, we got some tweets from a couple of our listeners, and I thought I would be preemptive in the smack talking.
And just face it head on and say, get it out of the way
now. That's a good way to do it, man.
I'm never going to live this down for the next year.
No matter what you say.
Even if the Suns make the playoffs and the Sixers don't win another game, every single time we talk about them, these two gentlemen in front of me will say,
well, we did beat you.
But we beat you.
No, but to be fair, I mean, I don't know.
I can't really talk smack about a team that's now 2-31.
Well, no, it was cool. There was some historical, if you want to call it historical significance. There was so the Sixers now have Ish Smith. They also have Kendall Marshall, who the Suns drafted, and they have Mike D'Antoni as an assistant coach.
Yep.
So it was a really neat game to see, apart from the fact that the Suns have been so awful the last couple of weeks that I almost don't want to watch another Suns game until they rack up two wins in a row.
Like, I hear you, dude.
I'm done with this team.
Justin and I went to Sixers Grizzlies on Monday, last Monday now, and it was just, man, it almost broke me, man. I'm not going to lie.
It was very rough. I think the stats from the game was like 26 turnovers led to 38 points for the Grizzlies or something like that, and it's just like, I was in the stands just like, this
it was awful.
Is so bad.
They let up like 10 points on 4 turnovers in like 35 seconds at one point.
And then the contested 3-point.
But I will say this, and I'm not getting my hopes up because we've been down this road before. However, in watching him warm up, if Joel Embiid ever plays, look out. That dude is splashing threes, man. I'm telling you, he's got that stroke is crazy.
Yeah, if he ever plays,
I told you, I was down by the court. I told the guy, I said, if Joel needs my navicular bone, I am more than willing to donate it.
What did they say?
Oh, of course they're all about it. Listen, you got to sacrifice for the cause sometimes.
Right.
That's what we're all about here, sacrificing for the cause. Here on the Drive and Dish NBA podcast, my name is Kevin Rayfuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
Ball does not lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzart.
Overwhelmed by all these great iTunes reviews for hashtag bigger than us, hashtag listen in color.
I'm actually more just surprised that you had a tweet ready to go this time.
This is
a first.
I like this one because it shows that basketball players are just like us. We love iTunes reviews.
Yeah, that is true. I've been checking out some of the reviews on the new Woj podcast.
How are they going?
You know, it's cool. It's a cool podcast. It's very, I don't know, have you listened to it yet?
No, I've been seeing him tweet about it, and I'm going to get back into it because I listen to him on my rides from work.
Right, but you've had some time off work?
Yeah, so I haven't
gotten to it. It's a cool podcast. It's very newsy.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because that's what the guy does for a living.
Yeah.
Zach Lowe, so Woj's first episode he had Adam Silver on, and then Zach Lowe the subsequent week had Adam Silver on.
Right.
And Zach Lowe's podcast with Adam Silver was better. So much better.
But yeah, I mean, Zach Lowe is, I mean, like you summed it up best. Woj to me is the guy who is in the trenches and breaking the news. And that to me is where, you know, it's a Woj bomb for a reason. Where Zach Lowe, I mean, I've said it before on this show, and I mean, Zach Lowe to me is the best basketball writer in the game. There is no one out there, be it podcast or just writing, that I as a fan learn more from than Zach Lowe.
It kind of reminded me of the, obviously on a larger scale, but we as a podcast have, I don't know, you don't want to call them competitors because it's not competition, but there are other basketball podcasts out there that a lot of people listen to where they're very newsy and they do the play-by-play breakdowns and they talk about cap space and all that jazz, but it doesn't have a good conversational flow. Zach Lowe to Woj's podcast reminded me of our podcast to other ones that are kind of on the same level.
Okay. Well, no, hey, I'll take that as long as we're being compared to the great ones, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hopefully. But speaking of iTunes reviews, as Justin brought up, and things we're being compared to, we have an iTunes review this week. It's from Australia. Australia's been on a roll recently, by the way. You know, mm-hmm. Shout out to the Aussies, as always. They've been holding us down for a long time. But this review is called A Healthy Alternative. It's a 5-star review by Wizard Sleeve. The two E's, or the first two E's in Sleeve, I should say, are both 3s. It says, just discovered this a few weeks ago, and I am loving these guys and the very excellent Drive and Dish podcast. Whilst they may not be the number one basketball podcast, they're definitely an early draft choice. The Porzingis of podcasting, if you will. They're informative, if perhaps a few days delayed, funny, insightful, and there's great chemistry between the guys. I'll be listening in all season long. Thanks for the great stuff, and lay off the Michelob Light.
Michelob Ultra.
Whatever,
Michelob
either way, just
speaking
needs
of,
to lay off it.
I got home, because I went home for the holidays, and when I got there, my dad had a 24-pack of Michelob Ultra.
Did you drink all 24 and you could still walk just fine?
No, we hung out. We hung out. We
Justin
watched
could
some...
drive the Indy 500 right. after he drank a case of that.
No, it was awesome. And then the other thing about being home is I got to have crab fries, which are amazing.
I forgot
how amazing those are.
I did as well.
Oh,
shout out
good.
To Old Bay Seasoning.
Yep.
So at the end of the episode, we're going to do something really cool.
Okay.
So I want to tease the listeners to it right now.
Yeah, we love history.
Yeah, here. Actually, I'll let Kevin tease this. I feel like he would do a better job than I would.
Well, actually, and Tim's the one who actually found this first, so he's being humble here and letting us talk about this. But we're both, you know, I was also a history major in college, fun fact. Tim loves history. We always talk about this stuff. We actually talk about things other than basketball. But anyway, so coming up at the end of the episode, they just uncovered the only known recording of Dr. James Naismith, who, unless you are somehow living under a rock, created the wonderful game of basketball that we are here podcasting about. Mm-hmm. So check that out at the end of the episode. Stay tuned for that.
Yeah, he talks about the first basketball game ever in 1889.
Yeah. I didn't say the score.
No, he didn't say the score, but he talks about how he came up with the game. It's really cool. So we're gonna put it at the end of the episode.
Peach
for
baskets.
You. Mm-hmm.
Seriously, cool stuff. Okay. Well, why don't we get some news?
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now, if you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA news on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in your news, the Suns seem to be changing things up. They held a series of staff meetings Sunday. They've decided to shake up their coaching staff. Sources told ESPN.com on Sunday night the Suns are going to promote NBA guard Earl Watson and former NBA D-League head coach Nate Bjorken to the bench to work closer with Hornacek, and they will dismiss veteran assistant Mike Longobardi, who was heading up Phoenix's defense, and Jerry Sting. Earlier Sunday, ESPN first reported that the Suns' 5-15 nosedive included a home loss on Saturday night to the Philadelphia 76ers, put Hornacek's job security under immediate threat. Sticking with the Suns, guard Eric Bledsoe is likely out until after the All-Star break due to a sprained knee. Alec Burks is out for at least 6 weeks with a fractured ankle. Another injury, Blake Griffin suffered a partially torn quad tendon. He will be reevaluated in 2 weeks. The Sixers waived Tony Roten and traded 2 second-round picks for Ish Smith from the Pelicans. Markieff Morris has been suspended for 2 games because he reportedly threw a towel at Jeff Hornacek during their loss to the Bucks. The unpaid suspension will cost him nearly $50,000. Kobe Bryant is leading all other players in the All-Star voting. He has more votes than LeBron and Kevin Durant combined. Steph Curry is the Associated Press Male Athlete of the Year. This is only the 4th time a vote has been awarded to an NBA player. 2 people tried to kidnap Manu Ginobili's parents by ambushing them in their garage the night before Christmas. The Spurs beat the Nuggets, extending their home win streak to 26, which is a franchise record for the Spurs. And lastly, in your news, Otto Porter has returned from injury for the Wizards. Bradley Beal has also started non-contact activities. Hopefully he can return to the court soon.
Something.
So before we get into the Christmas Day games, and this affects one of the teams that obviously played on Christmas, we have some unfortunate news, and that is Blake Griffin will miss the next 2 weeks. He has a partially torn quadriceps tendon,
yeah.
Which sounds awful.
Yeah, and I mean, Griffin's been playing really well this year. 23 points per game, 8 rebounds and 5 assists in about 30 games so far. I mean, he's really been stepping up his game. And the one thing I was thinking with Griffin this year is he came into the league already putting up big numbers, but every year he seemed to been able to increase some category of those numbers. Like, I think it was he was averaging like 22 points when he first came in or something like that, and like he's still able to improve on that and improve in other areas for his game, which is impressive. I think the Clippers are really going to be hurting.
Well, he's become a respectable jump shooter, that's been the key to his development. I mean, Blake, when he came into the league, was a lot of just athleticism and out jumping people, and you know, he always had that little bit of a post game, but now that he's had a respectable jump shot, it just makes him such a more dynamic player. I mean, yeah, of course it goes without saying the Clippers are going to miss him for the next 2 weeks. I mean, he's a superstar. Let's not beat around the bush. Thankfully it's only 2 weeks.
The other thing to say is they say they're going to reevaluate him in 2 weeks, so it could be a little bit longer depending on how the rehab goes.
I mean, the seeding is important because we know what the West is like, so
well, yeah, you want a home court advantage in the West.
You need
home court advantage this year.
Yeah. But again, the it's good that this is happening now. You know, we know what the Clippers are playing for. The Clippers are playing for June. And so, but obviously that seeding is important, and it'll be curious to see how it affects that. And we're going to get into the Clippers a little bit more, but you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzart. Follow us on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA. So Christmas Day, besides, you know, Santa coming down the chimney and getting gifts and all that fun stuff, though, it didn't really feel like Christmas this year. It was like 70 all along the East Coast everywhere, even up in Philly.
I know. I actually got sick because of the temperature change. When I first got there, it was like 35 degrees, and then by the time Christmas came, it was like 70.
And then just jumped. Yeah. And
it's that's how it is when you live in Arizona. There's 30-degree temperature drops every night.
Yeah.
Even here in Florida, it's a little bit like that.
Yeah, and it's worse, and it's because of the lack of moisture in the air, but right. That'll make you sick. What did you guys think of the overall, before we get into the game specifically, but the overall presentation of the Christmas Day games? You know, obviously they were hyped.
Fun fact, 11 million viewers for the Warriors-Cavs game.
Nice.
Which is pretty good.
It was the highest rated Christmas Day game ever?
I really liked the way they presented it. You know, they had all the cool, like, Christmas stuff going on. I don't know. I wasn't a fan of the jerseys were cool this year, but I feel like I like the ugly sweater, you know, warm up. Well, they all kind of had like the warm up shirts that they were wearing when they were just shooting around. It looks like an ugly sweater, and every team had their own customized one. I really like that, but I almost wanted the jerseys to just look like an ugly Christmas sweater. Yeah,
some of the jerseys were better than others. Like, I didn't particularly like San Antonio's that much.
I didn't like the San Antonio one either.
Yeah, it seemed kind of bland. It was like I like their original jerseys. I don't know. Christmas Day uniforms, they're real hit or miss for me. I'm more not a fan of them than I am a fan of them, but I understand the significance. And the NBA has just really done a great job in recent years the NBA owns Christmas. Like, let's not make any doubts about it anymore. If you're not watching a Christmas movie or some kind of Christmas programming on TV, you're probably watching basketball.
Yeah.
I adjusted my entire schedule to watch the Christmas Day games.
Mm-hmm. I just love when I can fall asleep during a first half and then wake up and watch a second half and then just roll right into a next game. And it never stops. It's so great.
I kept fighting
like
with my mom.
A 15-minute delay between each game.
Me and my mom kept getting into arguments because my mom's very the Christmas story has to be on all Christmas Day. Like she just loves that to be on.
So you like just I, watch it once and just. You
well, no, no, you don't ever just watch it. It's just on, and like you kind of throughout the day see different clips of it. But so she would put that on, and then I'd walk in and I'd switch it to the Heat Pelicans game or something. And then I'd walk out of the room to go to the bathroom or something, and she'd change it back to A Christmas Story, and I'd walk back in and change it back. And it got to the point like later on the night, I'm like, who keeps changing the channel? My mom's like, are you the one changing it back to basketball? It was pretty good. It was a good.
The only one I didn't watch in real time was the LA versus LA. Because
I didn't,
yeah,
know. But which,
I fell asleep,
which actually got surprisingly close in the end.
Like, we'll talk about. But so overall, I was ready to be disappointed with a lot of the matchups
yes.
because I just thought, well, last year these teams were good. This year they aren't. It's too bad. It is what it is. But they ended up being surprisingly competitive.
And
you know, the Pelicans. Here, I guess we'll talk about that first. Mm-hmm. They went to overtime.
Yes, they went into overtime. Heat won 94-88. The thing I that's a fun fact is the Heat went to a 10-2 all time on Christmas Day games.
Hmm.
So they're pretty good when it comes to being on Christmas. And the other thing I got from the game is I feel like Bosch is really underrated.
Bosch is underrated, but he also needs to drive to the rim a little bit more. Bosch had this quote at the end of the game where he said, I've never been so open before. And he told Anthony,
don't leave me open.
Yeah, don't leave me open. And so after the game, a lot of the media was giving a hard time about talking to Anthony Davis so much. And so he said, quote, I just like people to talk to me.
He just wants to talk to you.
He's just an extrovert.
He's just a lonely dude.
Which reminds me of when you guys were talking about Dwayne Wade saying Chris Bosh comes over and he's like Kramer.
Oh, gosh, no. And the Pelicans, I felt like the Pelicans had the same problem we always said the Pelicans were going to have. They don't have enough people to space for Anthony Davis.
They don't run an offense other than Anthony Davis. They give the ball to Anthony Davis and say score or pass to somebody that's open.
Well, this is what we complained about last year with the Pelicans. We're like, they aren't running enough of their offense through Anthony Davis. Now it seems like they're running a little bit.
Too much.
Too much, but the Heat, okay, so the Heat were 6-26 from three and the Pelicans were 6-20. Like, neither team is a very good three-point shooting team.
Yeah. Well, the Heat is going to be one of my big concerns with the Heat as we go forward. You know, we know this team is athletic, but they're not really great at 3-point shooting. I think they're in the bottom half of the league for sure. I think even
Chris
lower
Bosch
than
is their best 3-point shooter,
right?
And he shouldn't be.
And more importantly, the Heat's bench unit is quietly the 28th best overall in the league. So
Amari Stoudemire didn't play, right?
No. I don't believe he did. No.
Is he out with an injury right now?
No, they said he's actually just resting now. I think they've only actually played him in two games this year or something.
Yeah, it's a super low scoring game. It took overtime in order to get into the 80s.
Yeah, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah, no, offense, it was terrible. Oh, it was so rough. And the Pelicans' last play was just is such a symbol of what's wrong with their offense. Like, Ryan Anderson had a really solid game and is a guy who can hit the three.
Points,
and you have Drew Holiday who can hit the three. And they just drew up this play and they gave the ball to Anthony Davis, like, just inside the three-point line and had him hollow contested jumper. And it's just like, that's not even Anthony Davis's game.
But the thing I'm looking at is the Heat had 18 turnovers and the Pelicans still couldn't. You know, when Miami even out-rebounded the Pelicans 57-45, which I feel like, I mean, other than Whiteside, I feel like Anthony Davis should be getting most of those.
Whiteside didn't play a lot in the fourth quarter either.
No, he only played 25 minutes.
Whiteside also had 11 boards in the first quarter.
Yeah.
So, the Heat defense ranked second in points allowed and seventh in defensive rating. Once it got to overtime, and I don't want people to forget about this, but Tyreke Evans forgot two plays at the end of the game, and he had to go back and ask Doc Rivers the first time. Then they played another one. I think it was two possessions later. And he couldn't figure out if he was supposed to set the screen or not. So he just went and stood by a Heat player.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, could that be just because he was injured and didn't really get to play?
He said it's because he was sick during the game. He threw up at one point. And
that's
he asked to come out once because he was having a hard time breathing. But yeah, I mean, he just like forgot the plays.
It was kind of really, honestly, the first game was ugly by both teams. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like the best game, best game played.
So takeaways from watching the Heat and watching the Pelicans.
I think Goran Dragic's starting to kind of feel feel...
Well, I feel so bad for Dragic because Dragic left the Suns because Eric Bledsoe had the ball and he was standing in the corner.
And now he's not getting...
To go to the Heat where Dwayne Wade has the ball and he's standing in the corner.
Right.
The Heat need to figure out Goran Dragic and they need to get him involved because having him stand on the corner
is... very quiet.
It's a waste of Goran Dragic. But there was also one point where the Heat had set a down screen and Goran Dragic got into that little open pocket and he didn't shoot the ball. So Goran Dragic also has to be more aggressive. Like if you're... Yeah. I realize that mid-range jumpers aren't the best shot in the world, but you're completely wide open. You got the look. You got the space. You're in the pocket by yourself. Shoot the ball.
Right. I agree. What I took from the game is that Bosch and Wade are still the two guys for the Heat team, and hopefully they can stay healthy enough to keep pushing them forward.
Well, that was going to be one of my takeaways. I think that the Heat have done a really good job, and Dwayne Wade's done a really good job of not only managing his minutes this year to where he can still be effective, but just, I mean, Dwayne Wade's missed one game this year, and it's because his son got sick.
Right.
So it wasn't even because of injury. His health, which has been such a big concern the last few years, I mean, even going back to the championship teams, his health was a concern, and it's just been a non-story this year. And I think that's been a really good job by the Heat to manage Dwayne Wade's health. I think the downside to the Heat, as I mentioned earlier, is I think they got to find that bench scoring.
Right.
And that's going to kill them in the playoffs if you don't have that bench scoring. As for the Pelicans, I think the Pelicans have a few good pieces. I think it's good to see Jrue Holiday is starting to look like himself again. I think Tim said it best. Last year, they didn't get Anthony Davis involved enough, and this year it seems like they're just deferring to Anthony Davis and giving him the ball and saying, do something. And you know, we know he's a superstar and it is going to be transcendent, but you have quality players on this team. Like, you have to trust somebody beyond Anthony Davis or they're just going to triple team him every time.
I have a question for you, Kevin. I was thinking about it yesterday. Was that I remember last season you were saying Anthony Davis might be the best player in the world, blah, blah, blah. Not just you, but a lot of people were saying it.
A lot of people think that, yeah.
And this year he's had a down year. It's not been awful, but he's had a down year. But I no longer ever hear that. Given what you've seen out of Anthony Davis this year, do you still think he is a top three player in the league?
Oh, sure. I think he's still very young. I don't know.
Right
though. That narrative did kind of vanish.
Pelicans have been awful.
Well, the Pelicans have been awful, and I think he's been dealing with a little bit of injury issue early on in the year, so I think he probably got off to a slow start. I mean, he's had games this year where he looks like Anthony Davis, and I think we're going to see more of that. I'm still absolutely on the Davis hype wagon. I mean, I'm not going to... A down start to the year, what are we through? We're a little over third of the season now.
Yeah.
I'm not going to just suddenly chalk out this kid's potential.
Well, my thing is
not
like,
potential, but I mean right now. Yeah, I mean, I think he's still adjusting, and I think he's also learning a new system. Alvin Gentry is a different coach than Monty Williams was.
I think it's weird to me, like, he's having a down season, or, you
know. His field goal percentage is way down.
Yeah, but he's still putting up big numbers. Like, it's still big numbers.
He's taken more mid-range and more three-pointers.
But they said they wanted him to learn that.
Right. Well, that's going to be part of it. If all your baskets aren't, if all your buckets aren't right around the basket, your field goal percentage is going to go down.
Of course, and that's why usually, you know, the big guys' field goal percentages stay up in the higher range, right, which was your problem with DeAndre Jordan being on the top five players for
his free throw.
His free throw percentage.
I feel like when you're talking about field goal percentage, obviously it's always centers, but I think they need to weigh the free throw percentage with that stat when they're talking about top field goal. They make a true shooting percentage then.
Right. So the next game was the Bulls and the Thunder.
My favorite game of the day.
It was very intense.
Yeah,
they were very angry.
Once it got out of that first quarter. So in the very beginning of the game, Steven Adams picked up two quick fouls, so they had to put Cantor in, and a lot of Thunder fans have been calling to see Cantor in the starting lineup, including myself. Well, then the Bulls went on this run and the score was like 20-8.
Oh.
You know, like right away.
Right.
So I don't think that you can necessarily say this isn't going to be, it can't be successful, but in that small sample size, it wasn't.
I also feel like not enough people are talking about how well Paul Gasol is playing. He's putting up pretty good numbers for being an older guy. I mean, in that game, he put up 21 and 13 rebounds.
There was another player that was really big a couple of years. Oh, Joakim Noah. So you remember Joakim Noah when
coming
he was,
off the bench
when he was an All-Star 2 years ago? And Pau Gasol. Like I thought their trajectories were going to be opposite of what
you
they
thought.
Are.
Joakim Noah would be putting up 21
and
13.
Pau Gasol wouldn't be good, but
Noah's
it's just weird.
Noah's just been robbed of all his lift. I mean, that's really what it is. He just can't elevate anymore. It's all the foot injuries. It's the just foot issue after foot issue after foot issue. And it's a shame. He was such an elite defensive player just as recently as a few years ago. But Bulls fans, they hear this what if all the time, I feel like. But one point that I wanted to bring up is a guy who was in Rookie of the Year discussion last year was Mirotić. And it seems like he's just vanished this year. Or the teams have figured him out.
He's not that good of a shooter. And so they've he had that 1 month last year that you were talking about when we were debating the rookie of the year awards. But he's not that good of a shooter, and that's why the Bulls have been calling for a lineup change. Might be one of those things too where he plays better with Taj and Pau plays better with Noah. Right. Some of it might be a lineup thing, but yeah, he hasn't been that effective this year.
Yeah, and it's just really strange. You expect him to leap, and honestly, his 3-point percentage this season is actually a little bit higher, but his overall percentage is just way down. I mean, they basically limited him to a 3-point specialist. He had this element of his game where he had this really patented pump fake that he would use to get in these open looks, and it seems like defenders just aren't biting on it anymore.
So the elephant in the room with the Bulls is that they put out, I don't know if they put it out or it got reported or whatever, but that they're looking to trade either or both Taj and Noah for a wing.
Right.
Now the Bulls are without Mike Dunleavy, and they obviously need some shooting, but I was trying to think of a team that needs a big and can give up a wing. And I can't think of one instance in which that would be plausible.
Right.
Like, I was thinking maybe Jamal Crawford, but, you know, do the Clippers need another
Well, now, break? Well, they might now because of Blake
yeah,
going
but I mean,
down
Blake's
for a little
two-week
bit.
Injury,
yeah,
probably.
But even so a quick little replacement, and then you got someone to...
There's not a lot of wings in the league right now.
The thing with the Clippers that I've noticed is kind of once Griffin goes down, who do they really have that there's... That's their next go-to guy for that position.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Smith, but the Clippers also, like the Bulls and the Pelicans, apart from J.J. Redick and Chris Paul, like they don't have any shooting.
Right.
So it's one of those things where like the Clippers also need a wing. And it's great you put them out there on the trade market, but I just don't know.
Right.
Well, here's my thing at the other end of this, too. Going back to the Bulls is, you know, say you trade Taj Gibson, who has been one of your more dependable players the last few years.
He put up 13 and 10 on Christmas
Day. Well, and it's just like, what bigs does that leave you with? Powell's contract is going to be up sooner than later, and Powell's only getting older. You know, mm-hmm. if you can't trade Noah, but you trade Taj, you have a center who looks like he's on the decline. And so at that point, you have no interior. It just seems like if you can't get an elite wing, why are you going to trade the only reliable interior defender you have?
Because the league is going to small ball, pace
they
and space.
They want to start going to small ball, too. I don't know.
You can play Taj in a small lineup, though, too.
But not all teams need to go small ball.
Right, well, that's why they said they want to get rid of one or both. Like,
right. But my thing is I forget who wrote the article, but it's an article talking about how not all teams should go small ball. You should only do it if you can.
Right. I've had this problem with the Suns when the Suns will go really small against these teams. I'm like, it's not that you guys have a bit a bad small ball lineup. It's that there's a certain point in which playing big is more effective. Like if you can make people pay by playing big when they can't, why not play to that strength?
Be big and bully them around. Yep. If they're playing small, you can bully them around.
Well, it's the same with the Wizards. How we're talking about how the Wizards, now that last year we're calling on them to play small. They do it this year. They aren't any good. They're terrible defensively. They aren't very good offensively. Maybe your strength was playing big.
Right. Well, back to the.
Because that's what we're actually talking about.
Right. Well, back to the Bulls and Thunder game. The thing that I was really surprised was Chicago held the Thunder to 38% shooting, which is actually OKC's third worst showing of the season. But Kevin Durant still put up, 29, and Westbrook put 26.
Yeah, Kevin Durant had 29, 9, and 7. Westbrook had 26, 7, and 8, and 6 steals. The next leading scorer was Kanter. Oklahoma City got 11 points from its other three starters in Robertson, Adams, and Serge Ibaka. If they're going to compete with any of the great teams out west, they have to get more production out of their other players. So there was a stretch at the end of the game where Anthony Morrow, he hit three threes in a row, basically.
Right.
And it's that kind of thing where you
in the fourth quarter, you
have to get more production out of it. And that's why I've been calling for them to stop starting Roberson, because you have to get production out of these players.
Right. Well, and the other thing that was cool is, so in the fourth quarter when they started Durant, Westbrook, Ibaka, Cantor, and Morrow, which is their lineup that doesn't really do well on the defensive side, they still held the Bulls to 6-for-20. So it was like, all right, you can ride this for now. Like, you don't have, like, their defense is working at the moment, so like, why not keep up with it?
Yeah, it's really weird too. Oklahoma City they have some pretty quality wins this year. A lot of Western Conference teams. They beat the Spurs. They beat the Clippers. But anytime they play the Eastern teams, it seems like they slip up. You know, this is now the second time they've lost to Chicago. They've lost to Toronto. They've lost to the Knicks. They've lost to Boston. They've lost to Atlanta and Miami. And it's just like,
why?
I don't understand what. And we talk about when seeding is so important. Oklahoma City has got to beat these teams that they are better than if they're truly going to be considered elite, because at some point they're going to have to beat either San Antonio or Golden State or both, and Lord knows that's going to be a lot more difficult if you don't have home court advantage.
Well, they got to move the ball a bit more than they have, but I don't think we've talked about the Bulls quite enough from this game. In this game, I felt like the Bulls looked like everything I expected them to look like with the new offense, with Hoiberg.
Yeah. Butler put up 23, Rose put up 19.
Butler put up those 23 while guarding Kevin Durant.
And what was it, Butler that had the half-court shot?
Yeah, I couldn't believe that way. And the camera panned to Russell Westbrook's face.
He's just like, shit. No, and I remember watching him throw it up, and I was like, that's going to go in. And it was just sitting there like, wow.
But again, the Bulls are just so maddeningly inconsistent to me.
Well, you just talked about the Thunder losing to those. So the Bulls in December, they beat the Thunder, the Clippers, and the Grizzlies. But they lost three straight. They lost to the Nets. That's the Suns and the Knicks.
Right. Yeah. So they're one of those. You can't lose those games.
Right. And so they're one of those teams that they're playing to their competition. That's where those comments from Butler where he was talking about,
which, I mean, I guess I have to mention this. My roommate last year when they were talking about getting rid of Thibodeau was very against it. And I was like, well, you know, they need a new coach and all that stuff. And so now he's been on top of me going, you know, oh, you remember when I said that? Remember when I said this? And I was like, it's a new coach. It's going to take some time. There's some frustration. I still think it's going to work out.
If the Bulls ever play to their potential, there's no reason why they can't seriously push the Cavs this year. It's just...
Well, that's what everyone's saying. Like, if out of any team, it seems like the Bulls would be the team that could do it.
Right, because they match up well, too. But it's just, we say this every year, and I need to see it. That's just at the point where I'm at with the Bulls. I need to see it. Mm-hmm. But you're listening to the Drivin' Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rayfuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzart. Like us on Facebook at Drivin' Dish NBA podcast. So the marquee matchup, which everyone has been waiting for and didn't disappoint by my eyes, was the finals rematch of last year. The Warriors did hang on to beat the Cavaliers. Came down to a fourth quarter game, really hotly contested, and just, you know, it lived up to the bill.
Yeah.
This game right here, and we talked about ratings before, anybody that maybe works in radio or TV will find this interesting, is that in Cleveland, it had a 21.2 rating.
Wow.
That is...
a lot.
Massive. I mean,
yeah.
That is really, really... If a radio station could ever get a 20-point rating...
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, the other thing to mention is the Cavs were on a 6-game win streak going into that game. And then what? Curry was like... Or the Warriors were winning 32 straight or something like that, regular season games other than...
At home.
At home, that's what it was, yeah. So, I mean, Sean Livingston played really well.
The Warriors the Warriors only made 5 threes. I guess my takeaway from this game, and that I guess there were a few, but my biggest takeaway from the game is that the Cavs played the game that they wanted to play.
They did.
They played the pace they wanted to play. They were trapping Curry. They were throwing really weird looks at him kind of the whole game. They held the Warriors to only 5 made three-pointers, and they still lost. And I'm starting to think that...
They can't. And we saw last year in the finals,
this isn't how you beat them.
Everybody's things about the finals was, you know, you didn't have Kevin Love, you didn't have Kyrie Irving. Well, they did now.
Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie Irving's still in a minute.
But
He's on a minutes restriction still, but no, I think Tim hit it on the head. I think you got this is the Warriors' first win of the season where they didn't score 100 points. You held the Warriors in check. You got them into the grind-out, gritty game that you want them to do, that we saw Memphis do for a bit last year in the playoffs, and that we saw Cleveland do to success. Now, I'm not giving Cleveland an excuse, though I will say, until Kyrie Irving is 100%, you know, I'm not... That's the matchup I want to see, is when they're fully 100%. However,
well, and Shumpert too.
Right. But Golden State dug in. And as far as, you know, Golden State won last year, and it's Golden State's, they clearly have the upper hand right now. It's got to be on Cleveland to get healthy and beat them. And right now, it's just, if this is the finals matchup, though, man, I'm excited.
Well, I wanted to bring this up. You said that this is the first time the Warriors have been held under 100 points for a really long time. The last time they were held under 100 points at home was against Sacramento on March 6, 2013.
Wow.
So I thought that was a really fun fact there. The other thing that was interesting, though, is J.R. Smith was 4 from 8 for 3, but the Cavs as a team were like 5 of 30 for 3-pointers. Like, they could not.
Well, Love, and if you listen to Love's post-game comments about it, is like, me and Kyrie were held to 0 for 11
they
from the 3-point line.
Yeah.
That's never going to happen again.
But it,
regardless, though, I thought it was really like when the Cavs tried to go small and played Love at the 5, that pick and roll coverage is just an absolute travesty, and they need to figure that out. So they started putting Shumpert onto Green, so that when they switch the pick and roll, that they would get a better look. So there's a lot of little things that the Cavs can do. Like, they were doing this thing where, When the Warriors were coming back on offense, so Bogut takes a really long time to get up the court because he's slow as hell, and so the Cavs would take their center and double team Curry until Bogut got back, and they were doing those little things like that the entire
game. That kind of work.
They were blitzing the pick and roll.
Well, and that's, the thing I looked at it was like, yeah, the Warriors were held to 89. The Cavs held them. But then what the Warriors did to return that is they held the Cavs to a 32% shooting average.
Mm-hmm.
So that what they did is, okay, you know, if we can't just outscore you, now we have to bring our defense on you. And Draymond Green had one hell of a game, 22 points, 15 rebounds, but he was all over the place.
Oh, and he held LeBron in check on the last few possessions.
Yeah.
And what really... I mean, LeBron, I hate the LeBron isn't clutch narrative because I think it's ridiculous, and he quite literally leads the league for fourth quarter points by a player this season on average.
He was not clutch in that game.
No, but that's what I was getting to. He was not clutch in that game. Those two missed free throws in particular down the stretch, I mean, that killed them.
Well,
are absolutely backbreaking missed free throws. And that's been one of the few knocks against LeBron James, is he's a really good free throw shooter, but he has moments where he's not a great free throw shooter.
He missed those two free throws. He then airballed a three, and then he missed a layup. Not a great game from LeBron. You can tell he's not the LeBron of 2012. Like, people kind of need to stop with that. So my question to you guys is, Draymond Green is averaging 10 more touches per game than Curry. And so you look at his stat line, he does everything for the team, but he's averaging more touches per game than Curry.
Right.
Are the Warriors relying too heavily on Draymond Green?
I think they're winning, and I think as long as they have that formula, I think Draymond Green hasn't shown to me any indication that he can't handle the load.
And my thing
is it surprising? Sure. But I also think, you know, it's not like Curry's not getting his touches. I mean, he's on pace right now to have the highest PER in NBA history and totally obliterate his three-point record. I mean, I think he's got 49 more three-pointers than anyone else in the league right now.
Well, and he still added 19 points. Klay Thompson also had 18. I think it seems like the Warriors do this thing where they go in like a rotation of players that they rely on almost. Like, Curry was doing a lot, but then if Curry can't do it, okay,
well,
no,
they just
Draymond
come at
Green.
You
like,
in waves. That's why they're so deadly. You can get you'll get the Steph Curry games a lot, but you'll get that Klay Thompson game where he scores 30 points in a quarter.
Yeah.
Or you'll get the Draymond Green game, or you'll get a Harrison Barnes game, or an Iggy game. That's what the key to the Warriors' success has been. It's been the depth. They just come at you, and you can't stop them. They wore Cleveland down in the finals last year, and they just they light you up, and they've lost one game all season.
And to mention, worth mentioning, I think Timofey Mozgov went 0 for 5.
Oh, yeah. Quietly in December, Curry has been averaging 28% from behind the line. His attempts have also been going way down. I mean,
he's also got this strained right calf thing going on because he actually left the game
and then came back.
He said it wasn't a big deal, but I'm kind of like looking at that.
He started off the season at like this unprecedented like rate of playing that would be almost impossible to keep up. But it seems like Curry's coming down a little bit more to reality right now. Obviously, 28% is way below what he's going to shoot for the rest of the season, but it seems like he is starting to get down to reality just a little bit. Personally, I think they do rely on Draymond Green. They're winning, yes, but they've quietly been slipping a little bit in December, and I think that in the finals, good teams are going to be able to take advantage of the fact that Draymond Green is getting so many touches.
I think the other thing I think kind of with the Warriors is they came out to such a hot start that they felt they needed to keep winning and, you know, keep the record going and go undefeated type stuff. And I think maybe now that they got that one loss, they can go, okay, let's take a breath and let's reload for, you know, the playoffs. And I think maybe some of the games they slip or they have these lapse of judgments. And that might be because now they're not feeling like, oh, man, it's us against everybody. Like, we got to take them all on. I think they might be calming down a little bit more. And maybe what you shouldn't do, but maybe relaxing on games that they think they got it in the bag.
I think maybe they should rest Curry a bit for a couple of games.
Well, he's got that calf.
With that calf injury, it's like, you know, everyone's talking, can they beat the all-time most winning record, you know, that was set by the Bulls back in the 90s? But it might be with that calf injury, because calf injuries can linger, they can return, that they might, you know, sit Curry for a couple of games.
Well, at the end of the day, it's just not that important in the grand scheme of things. You know, no one's going to remember if the Warriors had the best regular season record if they don't win the title.
Yeah, well,
I don't agree with that.
See, I think they still talk about it. Yeah. They would still remember it.
But it will be like an asterisk next to it. It's just like, but they didn't win. It's like the Patriots.
The Patriots
went 18 and had the 16-0 regular season in the NFL and got to the Super Bowl, but they lost.
So nobody's excited.
It's like, yeah, that is impressive, but you didn't win.
Yeah. No, I agree with that, too. I think you got to evaluate what's more important, I guess, in the end.
So There was a point, and we got to talk about it. I know we've spent some time on the Warriors Cavs, but we got to talk about it. So there was a point where Delly jumped on the back Iggy for an intentional foul on a made free throw, and a lot of people are calling for a rule change. And you know, the way the league was framing it last year is we don't want to change the rules if it's only for a couple of players. There have been more intentional fouls this year than all of last year combined.
Right.
And you know, we're going to transition the Rockets Spurs.
So I was just about to say, we're about to talk about it again in a second.
But it's, you know, should the league revisit this? Look at college ball where they don't do it. Look at overseas where they don't do it. You don't have to play like this. And I understand the point of make your free throws, but it, like, I'm getting tired of watching this on TV.
It's awful to watch.
Oh, it is awful to watch. I don't want to watch Dwight Howard and Clint Capella shoot free throws for 20 minutes. Like, it's just not entertaining. It's
That kind of got brought up again with that game, and this is where I thought you were going, was when Iggy and Delly were diving for that ball.
I saw that.
And Delly kind of went into Iggy's knees.
Well, it was where he went back on the legs,
yeah.
And it was one of those things where we had so many debates about it last year.
It's just not worth bringing
up
again.
Like, I looked at it, and I'm like, dude needs to stop. I'll bring it up. And then they're going to say, but he's just playing hard. It's okay.
And that's, so but that's, yeah.
Like,
that's fair.
Delly's brother or somebody with his last name got on Twitter and started talking about how if you play hard, you're going to do whatever you can to get the ball. I'm like, okay, but don't ruin a guy's career.
Yeah, you got to stop. I don't know. Like, I don't really want to revisit that
and
debate.
And once Mo Williams gets healthy, Delly's just not really going to be as much of a thing anymore again anyway. So,
well, that's the other thing that always gets brought up. He's in a position that he's just not qualified for.
And before we move on, because I do want to talk about the Rockets and Spurs game, because it was super entertaining, and I actually want to talk about the Rockets. But did you guys see Mark Jackson's comments on Steph Curry? And how apparently he says that Steph Curry is hurting the game of basketball because he sees players come in and just they only shoot threes now. And
no, they've been writing about that's what players are doing. But whoever the star is at the time when Kobe was a star, players wanted to play like Kobe.
Well, that's my thing too. But the other problem I'm hearing now is because when I was home, my neighbor's son plays basketball for our high school team, our local high school team. And he's a big guy. He's probably like 6'8", and he's a junior in high school, so you'd assume he's going to keep growing. So I'm sitting there talking to him. I'm like, are they working on your footwork and getting you down low? And he's like, no, what they have me do is they have me post up down low. And when I get the ball, I'm just supposed to pass it back to the guy at the three-point line.
That's what the way the game's been going. It's pace and space. You're shooting threes or you're going inside down low every time.
But why not also teach him footwork that, like, Okafor has? Like, teach him footwork so that if he gets to that position or gets there, like, he also can do that.
Well, there are people that argue Okafor's game is antiquated.
I don't know. I feel like if you're a big, you're still gonna have a spot in the NBA and in basketball. And if everybody's going to small ball lineup and you're a big that can just be as fast and guard someone at the 3-point line, you're gonna totally blow the NBA out of the water, and it's gonna confuse people because they're used to these small 3-point shooters.
Well, everyone's a damn stretch four now.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like the traditional I'm a low post four. It's just gone. But I think that the fewer players that have that low post game, the more valuable it's going
right,
to
and
become.
That's what I was telling the kid is, you know, have this low post game, but also do what they're telling you. But on the side, learn the footwork, learn the moves, learn the spin moves or whatever you got to do, and that will show up one day when that becomes a lost art. You know?
Yeah, Mark Jackson's comments weren't. I don't think he came up with that himself, but I've been reading articles, and everybody wants to be like.
I think
like
we've
Seth
been
Curry.
Asked that
They're
before.
They're just trying to shoot. So.
I can't believe none of you guys took the Mark Jackson is like the old man yelling at a cloud angle. I mean, no one took the fact that it's like, Mark Jackson's coaching didn't work, and now the Warriors are suddenly the greatest team of all time the year after he leaves.
No, because I read that apart before his comments.
I think it's more of that everyone wants to emulate whoever the key player is.
Yeah.
When Kobe was hot, everybody was doing the Kobe fadeaway. Come on, everybody did that. It was when people were sticking their tongue out when Jordan was the most popular player in the league. And, you know, people were, well, I guess you can't really imitate Shaq too much. But anyways, moving on. You're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzart. Check out our website. You can listen to all of our episodes there, driveanddishpodcast.com. So the Rockets and Spurs. Pretty entertaining game, actually. Again, the Christmas games were good this year. Can we just say that?
Okay,
like,
so
I'm tired of saying each one of these games is like, oh, yeah, it was good. Like, the Christmas slate of games was actually really solid.
Looking at
this
lineup, Spurs-Rockets, I was sitting there like, oh, this is just going to – the Spurs are going to destroy the Rockets because the Rockets don't have any defense. They're not going to be able to guard Kawhi Leonard. They're not going to be able to guard Aldridge. The Rockets' defense, you got to give them credit. They played fairly well.
The Rockets' defense just kind of baffles me because they have good defensive players. You know, Ariza is a solid defender, and Patrick Beverley is a solid defender, and Dwight Howard, even in his old age, is a solid defender, and Capella can defend. But their team defense is just so not good.
Yeah.
Bad, if you will.
Yeah, and the problem, I don't know, the only thing I got from this game is how annoying the hack of Howard and...
No, well, there was a game that was on a few weeks ago, and we were tweeting about it on the Drive and Dish account, where it was an entire, it was the Clippers and somebody else. It might have been the Clippers and the Rockets, where
they were just hacking each other
for an entire quarter. But there was a point in which, so the Spurs are really guilty of doing the hack of the hack of foul or whatever you want to call it. Hack of Shaq, hack of Jordan, hack of Capella. And they did it. Capella missed a couple free throws, and then they started making them, and they had to stop. I mean, I can't handle that.
This is the other thing, though. This was the first game that the Rockets hosted a Christmas Day game since 67 when they were actually in San Diego.
This was the Rockets team that everybody
thought. That is a stat.
There you go.
This is a Rockets team that everybody thought the Rockets were going to be this year, and then they weren't. I mean, there were some possessions at the end of the game where the Spurs just, you know, they didn't have it. They messed up, whatever. But if the Rockets can play like this, the Rockets have a chance to contend in the West.
Right. Howard was 11 points, 12 rebounds, which is actually his third double-double in the past five games, which I feel like if you're Howard, you should be able to... You should be doing double doubles. Those are your two, like, you know, two main points of your game. But I don't. The other thing with the Rockets is that report coming out that Howard's not happy playing with Harden.
I mean, I don't believe. I think he's probably happy that they're. I think he's probably unhappy. Excuse me, that they're losing.
I don't know, because as soon as he made those statements, all of a sudden, because Dwight Howard was attempting like seven shots a game,
they started getting him the ball.
All of a sudden, he's attempting like 15.
I will say this: James Harden is a type of player that needs the ball in his hands at all times. he takes a lot of shots. He creates on his own and maybe doesn't get his teammates involved as much. So I can understand why that aspect could be a little frustrating in playing with Harden. But, you know, the Rockets, ever, you know, we, the McHale firing was interesting, but they've quietly played better since then. But, and the Rockets, I agree, showed flashes of what they can be. And if they get back on track, you know, we had them in the five teams that could potentially win or come out of the Western Conference, I should say. It's just, I look at the eight teams that are in the playoffs in the West right now, and just the Rockets' defensive rating is just so much worse than any other of these playoff teams right now. I mean, the Rockets are letting up 105 points a game.
Right.
The next closest is down at 101, and you got some down in the 90s, and you got the Spurs, who are just unbelievable at 88 right now.
Well, so here's my other question is, Houston's bench outscored San Antonio's bench 41-26. Do you think San Antonio got rid of too much when they were trying to get Aldridge, like when they were moving people around?
No, I think San Antonio's just fine. I just think it was a slight off game. I mean, they missed like Kawhi Leonard went for that that jump shot right at the end that would have tied it or whatever.
He was
they just
8
like,
of 19.
I really like the dynamic between Tim Duncan and LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah.
I cannot believe how well they played together. How well, and both players can play inside and out, so it's so dangerous.
Yeah, it really
but
is.
But the problem with Aldridge that game is he was off. He only went 9 from 17.
I mean, he was forcing shots. They started going to ISO. Whenever a team gets down, and I've noticed this with my sons, I've noticed it with other teams, all of a sudden the ball
Knicks.
Movement stops. All of a sudden they start playing a lot of ISO.
The Knicks,
right? And that was happening in that game. So, I mean, he wasn't great in that game, but the dynamic between Aldridge and Duncan is going to be an absolute force in the playoffs.
Well, and more importantly, the other thing, too, is, you know, he's a favorite of the program, but it seems like we've been wondering if it would, well, not if, but when it would happen, but Kawhi Leonard is making the leap this year. It's finally here. I mean, he's already arguably been the best defensive player in the league. And just his offensive game is taking on such a new level this year. I mean, you were talking his three-point percentage. He's shooting 47% from beyond the arc right now. He's shooting
down 50, from 50%, though.
And his effective field goal percentage is almost 57%. It's would be the highest it has been in his career. And just, it's already incredible what he brings to in terms of his defensive impact. And you have to love, if you're the Spurs, with his added offensive game, and if you go up against the Warriors, you have to love his matchup on Steph Curry. Because he's the one guy where you're like, you know, I think he may actually be able to really severely limit Steph Curry.
And he's got that crazy wingspan, and he's got the big hands. Like, well, we're talking about how Curry hasn't been blocked that much this year. I feel like
he hasn't been blocked in like 400 shots or something.
Yeah, Kawhi Leonard's got the length and the size, I guess.
Well,
to
then
bully
it becomes
him around.
Where do you put Parker? Do you put Parker on Barnes and all of that?
Yeah,
I just can't wait till January 26th when we finally get to see the Spurs play the Warriors. Like,
because everyone's these guys are gearing up to be the Warriors killers.
If,
like,
if these
that's
two
specifically
teams,
what they do.
If these two teams, if it. Let's say there was some weird scenario where they both won the finals. They co-won the finals this year. These two teams would have the highest point differential by any NBA champion ever.
Yeah.
And I think this is where the Spurs want to be. They want to be quiet and they want to be good.
They are always quiet.
See, I don't think they're quiet anymore. I think everyone knows now how good the Spurs are in terms of competing with the Warriors. I think they were quiet the way they crept up because they were doing it defensively, but I don't think the Spurs are flying under the radar anymore. I think Oklahoma City is flying under the radar. Because I think people forget how good Westbrook and Durant can be when they go off.
Yeah, the same problem with that's always been with OKC is you have these two players that don't get anyone else a ball, and so.
Oh, I understand. I'm not saying they're better, but I'm saying OKC to me is like they'd be the guys where it's like we're not getting any respect. I think everybody knows San Antonio is every bit as golden or is playing as well as Golden State is right now.
I just want to see OKC one time in the finals. Are in the playoffs be healthy, because I feel like the last 3 years we haven't gotten it.
Never go in healthy.
And I just want to see what it looks like with a healthy OKC squad. I think top three teams in the West, OKC, Warriors, Spurs. And I think that they're a mile above everybody else.
I mean, I'd have to agree. I was trying to think of another team that I would argue.
The Clippers and Rockets were the two we had going into the preseason, right. But the Rockets, it's still kind of, we're still in improvement mode. They started the season terribly, and they have a long way to catch up. The Clippers are now dealing with Blake Griffin's injury, and they've had some.
And their bench, as good as it was supposed to be, is not. Now that we're talking about the Clippers, the next game up, the final game on the slate was the Lakers and Clippers, which actually ended up
a lot closer than it should have been, in the fourth,
a lot closer. And it's funny, Doc Rivers took it. They had a 28-point lead. Doc Rivers took out all of his starters. And then the Lakers came back without Kobe Bryant on the floor and brought it to within seven.
Yeah, actually, D'Angelo Russell played really well in the end there when he 16 points off the bench. Randall scored 9 points in, like, a three-minute span.
Hey, is Byron Scott going to play him now?
I mean, it looks like they're, I guess, you know, trust them now. I don't know.
I kind of wish his, obviously the only reason why this game was on TV was because it was for Kobe Bryant. So I wish Kobe would have come on in that last.
And just lit.
Those last 5 minutes when they had brought it to within seven. Like, I wish Kobe would have played.
Kobe's playing better recently. It's not like he's been shooting about 40% the last few games. He's averaging, I think, 23 points in the last few games. I think it was a 5-game sample. But that to me is just relieving, you know.
He ran a really effective pick and roll with Roy Hibbert at one point in the game, and I watched it happen. I was just thinking, why the hell hasn't he been playing like this all season? Pass the ball. He's so effective when he runs that pick and roll, when he passes a ball, when he brings a defense towards him. Pass the ball. Don't run the pick and roll. Get double teamed and then jack up a shot.
Well, did you see them at the? Because this was his 16th. His 16th Christmas Day game. And they were asking him, what he's going to do next year on Christmas. He's like, I don't know. I've been doing this for so long. Like, having a Christmas Day game is just, what I'm used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Anthony Davis said that when he saw the schedule come out and he was playing on Christmas, it's all he could think about through December.
Was playing on Christmas. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really big. You know, it's a kickoff of the NBA, for better or worse, for the casual fan. Scale of 1 to 10, how would you give the Christmas Day games overall?
Let's say solid 8.5 this year.
Maybe a 7. I mean, some of them were predictable, but the ones that I thought were predictable actually ended up being closer than given. So, yeah. And I honestly thought the Thunder were going to beat the Bulls. So,
I'd give it a 7, too. One thing, I guess, before we go to mailbag is that TNT games are down this year, even though the level of interest in basketball has gone up and significantly down as far as ratings go. And I was talking about it with a buddy of mine. I was saying it's because the Warriors are so good that
nobody's as interested.
It's hard when you know that team is so much. And I'm wondering, do you guys think it's the same reason or is it a league pass issue?
My thing, though, is I feel like for everybody that says the Warriors are so good, there's a million people who are going to turn in to say, oh, man, what is Steph Curry going to do tonight? I mean, Steph Curry is, a big reason Steph Curry is as popular as he is, not only is because he's great and because he's probably the best player in the league right now, but it's also because he's just in terms of social media, just all the Vines and all the Instagram videos.
Yeah.
And it's just, he's so marketable and it's just so, it's so pretty, for lack of a better term. It's beautiful basketball the way he plays, you know, with the three-pointers and the crossovers and it's just fun to watch.
So what do you think the reason for the TNT ratings being so down this year are then? You think it's a matchup issue? They haven't been playing good games on?
It could be that. It could be, you know.
I feel like it's not a good mix of teams.
I think cable's down too, honestly. I think that low key may be a bigger reason. I think people are cutting the cord. I mean, ESPN lost $3 billion because of people cutting the cord.
Yeah, I don't have cable. I don't have TNT. So I watch all those games, but I watch them the next day on League Pass.
Well, and that's the other thing is that's what I've been telling all my friends is I would cut the cable too. The only reason I keep it is so that I can watch sports in real time.
Sports and news. Mm-hmm. That was the only reason I keep cable.
So, you know, I got Hulu recently.
Yeah.
And I know you guys aren't a fan of Hulu, but with Hulu, I get all the news. I get it the next day or whatever.
Right.
But I get all those Comedy Central shows. I get, and that's not news, but whatever.
But that's how a lot of people our age or younger are getting news.
Well, I get all the MSNBC. I get the ABC nightly news, CBS nightly news, all that crap. So there are ways to get news without having cable.
Right.
Yeah. It just may not be live. That's the only thing. Like, say for, you know, obviously you hope this doesn't happen often, but like a Paris, for example, you know, you don't want that live instant coverage.
Well, that's, you know, that's
or
what
the tornadoes.
That's what Twitter comes in, or Reddit.
Or just like, where the tornadoes this weekend? There were crazy tornadoes in Texas.
Shout out to Memphis, man. I was thinking about those Grizzlies fans.
Dude, Mississippi and Alabama and Northern Texas, they all got, you know, our thoughts are with all of them. There were a lot of bad tornadoes down there.
So, let's do mailbag.
You've got mail.
Gather around, everybody.
Oh, boy.
All right, first up in mailbag this week, we got one from Keith Nassy. Tim, I'm going to just defer to you on this.
Yeah.
The question is, the Phoenix Mars situation seemed to reach a breaking point with Towelgate, and now Zach Lowe's reporting teams are asking for an asset when trading for him, much like Josh Smith with Detroit last season. Can the Suns still trade him, or have they reached the point of having to buy him out if they can't find a trade?
No, they'll find a trade for him, but it's going to be, they're going to have to give up like Archie Goodwin or something with it. And I'm totally okay with that. I think reports are that we were getting as we're recording this that the Phoenix Suns are looking at a coaching change with Jeff Hornacek. And when Markieff Morris threw the towel at the coach, which I actually wasn't all that upset about. The Suns were losing a game, and I thought to myself, at least somebody is having some sort of reaction.
Someone's upset about
it. Someone's
like,
upset about it. Yeah, I think they're going to have to throw in an asset. When he threw the towel at Jeff Hornacek, though, like Archie Goodwin had a laugh about it. The Suns have a couple of players who haven't been able to find playing time. I think at this point you sell low on Markieff Morris. This happened in the 70s. I don't remember who with, but that player was traded 5 days later. And I just wish the Suns would have been more proactive about trading him before this.
Wish that they would go for Ryan Anderson at all?
No, because then we're going to have to pay Ryan Anderson $20 million a year.
Right.
We already have Mirza Teletovic. We already have John Luehr, who's playing really well.
Right.
And I think that the Suns need a new small forward for better or for worse. Or but get him off the team because his attitude is infectious.
Right. Okay.
Well, some breaking news that we actually just got in, and this actually is relevant to our next mailbag question.
Mm-hmm.
Alec Burks has a fractured ankle. He's going to miss at least 6 weeks. So that's a pretty unfortunate news for the Jazz there. Another bad break for Burks, no pun intended. I mean, this guy is always getting hurt. Last year, he dealt with injury problems. And it's just been the story of Alec Burks' career so far.
Was that the mailbag question?
No. The question actually comes from Sarah. Who else? It's a Jazz question, so we're gonna get into that. Sarah asks, guys, can you talk a bit about my Jazz? What are they lacking to become not a contender but a 4 or 5 seed? I watched the game against the Warriors, and offensively they were worse than usual. Very little 3-point shooting too. Credit to the champions. Plus, we do miss Gobert, but there was very little left of the team that made the Warriors struggle so much in the first game.
Well, my first thought is Gobert being injured. That kind of hurts them. And I'm surprised she said very little 3-point shooting, because I feel like that's what they've been relying on a lot since Gobert's been absent, is a lot of 3-point shooting, which is kind of surprising.
I think that the Jazz lack a competent point guard, and like Nato has stepped in and actually been fairly good. I think that the Jazz should go out in free agency, depending on who's available, and sign a quality point guard, because I feel like that's the one thing that they're missing.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a shame, too, because they've invested so much in that position. You know, they drafted Trey Burke, and they drafted Dante Exum. And granted, Exum got hurt, so we still don't really know what Dante Exum is. But, I mean, I agree. I think they're just missing that point guard play. I think, and obviously Gobert being hurt in the short term, because it just,
his defensive
impact alone definitely in the short term makes a huge difference, but you know, when Gobert's healthy, the interior is not the issue.
No, but they still aren't a 4 or 5 seed with a healthy Gobert. So
it just makes their defense really,
I think, you know, the Gordon Hayward, for better or for worse, ends up playing a point forward. All the offense runs through him. I really just think it's a point guard. And if you look at their cap situation, they're going to have a hard time hitting the floor. And that's how well that they've drafted. So, you know, this team needs to spend some money anyway.
So go out for like a, which I don't want to say because I'd rather the Sixers go for him, but offer a max to like Schroeder or something.
Oh, Schroeder, and there was who's playing for the Raptors right now? I don't know why this is. Corey Joseph is like killing it for the Raptors, and I've read a lot of people saying the Sixers should have gone after Corey Joseph.
Yeah, that was a popular rumor last year.
It might be one of those things where the Jazz need to overpay a competent, not a great, but a competent point guard.
one that can thrive in their system. That's probably,
you know, which
true.
Is likely that the Sixers will have to do when Ish Smith is a free agent at the end of the season.
Right.
All right, so the next question comes from Stuart O'Kell on Twitter, at Stuart O'Kell. He asks, is the Ish Smith trade while releasing Tony Rowan the end of the process and added hashtag waste of a few years?
The only thing, no, and I saw people killing this trade, but I thought this is exactly what the Sixers have needed. It's what I've been calling for. The only thing that's a shame about it is, like, the Sixers could have had him for nothing. But no, I mean, I feel like this was a great move for the Sixers. Now with Ish and Kendall Marshall, although they aren't top-tier point guards, they run an offense, and that's exactly what the players that are playing around them need.
Well, watching the game that we went to against the Grizzlies, man, Tony Roten and Isaiah Cannon could not hit a free throw for their lives.
Yeah, well, Cannon's basically a shooting guard at this point, too, albeit not a very, you know, good one. Though he has games where he can be streaky, but he's very streaky at best. Mm-hmm. We'll put it that way. I think Tony Roten, after getting cut, ended the season with more turnovers than points, which is a bit of a problem. I love Tony. Tony has been one of the just one.
Wait,
of the most
he had more turnovers and points?
Yeah.
That is not a good stat.
Yeah, not a good stat. Yeah, not good. But
has anyone else ever done that?
I don't know. But I mean, granted, Tony only played a few games. You know, he just come back, but you know,
I don't care if it's one.
I know,
That's like, what's the other stat you always keep bringing up?
More shots than points.
Yeah,
and that one's bad. But more turnovers than points. Yeah. Oh my god!
No, but I feel bad for Tony, because Tony's just been one of the most, you know, fun people during this whole process, and he's just always been a great guy. It's just unfortunate he's just not very good.
No.
At least right now, he's got to get healthy, and he's still got a lot to work on. I don't know that he ever will go back into the league, honestly, but we'll see. We hope for the best for him. But no, I don't think the Ish Smith trade is the end of the process. I think, you know, you already have a few players on the Sixers who project to be here next year, and you have Dario Saric coming into the mix, and you have potentially four, at the minimum, three first-rounders coming into the mix. And so when you acquire all these second-round talents, you know, this is what you do this for. Is it a shame the Sixers didn't get Ish this offseason? Absolutely. Did the Sixers probably overpay a bit for Ish? Sure, because the Denver second-round pick is in the 30s, so that's a bit higher and could have a bit more value. But at the same time, you know, this is why you acquire assets. For occasionally when you need to, you know, you need to bring someone in. That's the point of the process.
Well,
that
this
you
is
can
all
spend
development.
These if need be.
And you aren't developing a point guard, but you don't have a point guard to develop.
Right.
So you've got to develop the bigs.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing, is you need a point guard who can get, you know, it is clear in watching Nerlens Noel play that he's much more comfortable on the floor with Ish Smith. That combination just works. It worked when going back to last year. And it's just one of those situations where, you know, you have to overpay for Ish. And trust me, it's been so incredibly awful to watch this year that, you know, you got to, something had to be done. It was getting to ridiculous levels.
Mm-hmm. Well, 2-30, something done. It does need to be done, but you know, it's,
hey, 1-0 with Ish Smith in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, that's a damn truth. I think it was a great move. I wish the Suns would have never gotten rid of him. I think Ish Smith has proved his worth.
He was doing really well for the Pelicans too.
Yeah, he's not a starting point guard by any stretch of the imagination.
But he's an NBA guard.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He absolutely belongs on an NBA roster. Final question comes from Pablo Newton Farley. He says, other than a funky dunk, obviously, what's at the top of your Christmas list? So I guess we should retroactively say, what's something dope that you got for Christmas?
I mean, I got a Fitbit. That's all I got.
I got two tickets to see the Harlem Globetrotters.
Ooh.
Oh, really? Where at?
In February in Jacksonville.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
That'll be fun. Mm-hmm. I when I got the Fitbit, I made a really, really good joke on Twitter, and nobody liked it.
Oh boy,
it was really sad. Yeah. I said I got a Fitbit so I can be a bit fit. Eh? No.
All right. You need to go take a lap while we answer this question. Oh, my brother bought a hoverboard. A funky dunk is a hoverboard.
Why do they call them hoverboards? Because they have wheels.
Everybody says that. I don't know. I don't know why.
That's what people call them. But my brother bought one, though. He didn't get it for Christmas. He had bought it a while ago. But and they're super fun, and I love watching the videos of people wipe out on them who just have no idea how to ride the thing. And they, to be fair, are more difficult to ride on than they look. Like,
yeah.
I got it down. I feel pretty good about it, but it's a little, like, when you first get on it, it's a little
sketchy.
Yeah, I don't know.
It looks tough.
It's sketchy.
Yeah, it's on the ankles, honestly. It's ridiculous as that sounds. It's a, it's in the Cavs a bit too. But anyway,
kind of like Steph Curry.
Probably the best.
Get it?
Yeah.
Probably the best thing I got for Christmas. I got an Apple TV. I'm pretty excited about that.
Oh, that's really cool, because then when you watch videos on your MacBook or your iPad or your YouTube or on your iPhone, it, you can watch them on your TV, which can be really handy when you're looking at live concerts from YouTube. So what you need to get is a soundbar for your TV, hook up, watch the old YouTube live concerts on YouTube, and then hook it up to your TV and watch it that way.
Yeah. Why is Justin laughing?
I just thought that was so nothing... funny. He's just like, I got this. You're like, oh, well, now you need to do this and this and
no,
this.
No, dude,
and this.
I want an Apple TV because, and I was talking to somebody about this the other day. One of my problems with the lack of record stores is you used to be able to buy live concerts on DVD.
Right.
That's no longer really a thing. Record stores don't really exist. So all those live concerts are going to YouTube, which is great.
Or if just I... get that one channel. On
yeah, sure.
What's it called? Palladio? Palladio? Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a cool channel. But I mean, there's like there's a lot of really cool concerts out there on YouTube that I'll like watch on my phone. But I'm like, this isn't very
well. You
good.
Can get, I mean, the just the smart TVs in general. I mean, it doesn't even have to be the Apple TV. I mean, the Google Chrome. I got my brother a Google Chromecast for Christmas, and they're relatively cheap. They're probably only about $40. Amazon's got their own version. But, Roku's got one.
But what makes Apple TV different is that it plays video from your iPad. So like I used to have NBA League Pass on my iPad, and I would play it on the TV with the Apple TV. Like, there's really cool things you can do with it. It's because we're iPhone users.
Right, right.
That, okay. Those other ones, just like they
you
don't
do. You could do it, but you wouldn't be able to do as much.
I don't think it'll stream things from your phone.
Okay. Mm.
So anyway, at the end of this episode, instead of doing the outro, we were going to play the very first, the guy who invented basketball, the
Dr. James Naismith.
Yes, the only known recording of it, and it's really cool. It's really historic, and he talks about the first ever basketball game in 1889.
Yeah. Ooh. Before we get into that quick, we'll do the abbreviated intro, though. Seriously, check it out on Facebook, Driving Dish NBA Podcast, on Twitter, at Driving Dish NBA, drivingdishpodcast.com. Leave your reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, and we'll have another episode for you next week.
Tomorrow night, 15,000 cheering fans will pack Madison Square Garden in New York City to witness a giant basketball doubleheader. In that cheering crowd, sitting in row C, seat 11, will be a modest 77-year-old man. Those fans won't know that he made possible the game they're watching, but you're going to meet him now. Sanka Coffee has brought him here tonight all the way from Lawrence, Kansas. Dr. James A. Naismith, the inventor of basketball. Dr. Naismith, how did you happen to invent basketball?
Well, Mr. Heater, it was in the winter of 1891 when I was physical instructor at Springfield College in Massachusetts. We had a real New England blizzard. For days, the students couldn't go outdoors, so they began roughhousing in the halls. We tried everything to keep them quiet. We tried playing a modified form of football in the gymnasium, but they got bored with that. Something had to be done. One day, I had an idea. I called the boys to the gym, divided them up into teams of nine, and gave them an old soccer ball. I showed them two peach baskets I'd nailed up at each end of the gym, and I told them the idea was to throw the ball into the opposing team's peach basket. I blew a whistle, and the first game of basketball began.
And what rules did you have for your new games, Dr. Naismith?
Well, I didn't have enough. And that's where I made my big mistake. The boys began tackling, kicking and punching in the clinches. They ended up in a free-for-all in the middle of the gym floor. Before I could pull them apart, one boy was knocked out, several of them had black eyes, and one had a dislocated shoulder. It certainly was murder. Well, after that first match, I was afraid they'd kill each other, but they kept nagging me to let them play again. So I made up some more rules. The most important one was that there should be no running with the ball. That stopped tackling and slugging. We tried out the game with those rules, and we didn't have one casualty. We had a fine, clean sport. 10 years later, basketball was being played all over the country. And in 1936, I saw it played for the first time at the Olympic Games. And the whole thing started with a couple of peach baskets I put up in a little gym 48 years ago. I guess it just goes to show what you can do if you have to.
Indeed it does.